Hey, caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend, Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Happy Saturday, caffeinators. Hope everybody's having a good weekend so far. Dave, how are you doing?
We're doing great down here. It's been like in the mid-70s the last few days, so I've been loving it much better than the 40s and the 30s that we've had here. Mm. How things going out there?
We kind of had a reversal. It's been cold for here. It's been in the low 50s all week and kind of rainy. Actually, yesterday we even had some thunder and lightning, which was Southern California, happens maybe once a year. So I enjoyed that. But otherwise, good. I got a good cup of hot coffee here. I have my Door County. I have the chocolate raspberry truffle again today. It's Molly's favorite, and she's got to be up early, so I made that. Nice. But what are you drinking?
So I'm drinking, we kind of posted this on Mental Health Monday a couple weeks ago, the Sip of Hope coffee roasters or community coffee roasters.
Yeah.
So I jumped on there and I ordered a couple bags. I got the Conversation Starter is one of them. And the one that I got for today is a Nicaraguan blend that is all women producers. So I thought that was appropriate for the episode in the women's, I almost said Women's Mental Health Month. That's not what it is. It's Women's History Month.
Right.
So I thought that was appropriate for today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And good coffee?
It's pretty good, yeah.
Nice.
I'm pretty happy with it.
Nice. That's awesome. That's such a cool thing that Sip of Hope is doing for that. If you guys didn't see our post, like 100%, right, Dave, of their proceeds?
100%, yeah. 100% of the proceeds go to mental suicide health. Prevention and mental health research.
Yeah.
And on the back of the bag, it's kind of interesting. They've got some stuff on the back of the bag. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline is on there. There's also some Trans Lifeline things there. And there's a little QR code that if you hover your phone over it, sends you right to their website. It's not Sip of Hope, but it's Hope for the Day is another website that's really centered on mental health and things like that. So it's really good overall. The fact that they're doing all this for mental health is fantastic, but the coffee's really good. So cheers to them. I'm really happy that we found them.
Yeah, for sure. So if you guys haven't already, definitely wander over to Sip of Hope's website and just support them, follow them, and know that they're doing good things. It's pretty awesome stuff. So we got a really cool episode today that we're pretty excited for. Definitely going to be a little bit out of our comfort zone, shall we say? But you know what? That's where the good discussion is. That's where we grow as people. So I'm really excited about what's going to be coming through today. So we have Brittany Laughlin coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today, and Brittany is graduated from Purdue University Veterinary Technology Program in 2010, and she's worked in both general practice and then is now in the neuro department at the Purdue University Veterinary Teaching Hospital. After spending some time as a neurology and orthopedic technician, she made the leap into neurology full-time. And in 2019, she achieved her VTS, her Veterinary Technician Specialty Certification in neurology, and is also the AIMVT, the Academy for Internal Medicine Veterinary Technicians, I said that right, as the president-elect for the Academy. So that's super cool. She's been published in journals and speaks on neurology topics. Super cool. But we're actually going to be talking about something different today. So we'll get to that in a moment. So Brittany, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe and spending some time with us. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
Hi, thank you. My preference is tea.
Oh, okay.
Coffee,
we can do tea.
Is disgusting.
We definitely have tea. What kind of tea would you like?
My preference is like a spiced chai.
All right, coming right up.
We can put that on the menu.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you don't mind, we always have people take us through their career path, I think, because so many people have so many stops along the way that I think a lot of people can relate to or kind of remember back to going through some of those times as well. So if you don't mind, take us through your career path, where you started, why you got into vet med, and how that kind of led you to where you are now, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. I mean, I feel like probably nothing particularly dramatic on my end, but I feel like there's a lot of people in our profession that have kind of a quote-unquote non-traditional path to
sure.
where their career started and how they got where they're at. But so I'm, you know, the same. So, after high school, my big drive after high school was to be involved in the music industry and music recording and things like that. And so after high school, I moved in with my sister in Arizona and went to school for about a year in Arizona, getting certificates in audio recording. So music recording, and we did some stuff for, you know, like movies and things like that.
So do you want a job?
I know, right? Like, all this podcast stuff is actually a little bit exciting to me because, like, I'm you know, very familiar with how all this stuff works and all that. So
you're probably better at it than I am.
I doubt it. That was a long time ago. So I did that for about a year, and part of that program was to do an externship, but I lived with my sister at the time, and my sister was working in veterinary medicine and was very involved in her career at that time. And so as I'm living with her, I see her, you know, I remember nights, you know, sitting on the couch watching Grey's Anatomy, which also tells you, like, this was season one of Grey's Anatomy. That's how long ago this was happening. And she would be like reading, you know, veterinary journals and would talk to me about, oh, here's this interesting thing or this cool case happened and things like that. And so I had some introduction and influence kind of from her, just that's what she did and things like that. So anyway, so I had to do my externship. So I moved outside of Chicago and spent some time working in downtown Chicago at a small little studio doing commercial stuff. And the recording industry is very challenging to get paid work in. So usually people start out as unpaid interns for sometimes years and until they get to, So I was doing that on top of working, you know, a full-time job at, I think at the time I was at like a bookstore or something, and, you know, getting my feet wet with that stuff. And anyway, ultimately it ended up being that, like, it was taking up too much of my time and I wasn't really getting where I wanted to be there. And so a friend of mine was working at a bank. So she was like, hey, why don't you come and work at the bank? You'll make decent money and can have some more free time, I guess. So I kind of jumped ship from retail and from pursuing this audio recording stuff and decided to work at a bank for a little while. Well, turns out working at a bank is really boring.
I can only imagine.
I mean, it was pretty good pay and it was pretty easy stuff, but just after a little while I was like, man, this just really isn't challenging me the way that I would like to be challenged. So I started to think about, like, what really do I want to do ultimately, you know, like, what else could I do with myself? And so the influence of my sister and talking to her a lot and stuff, I was like, you know, the stuff she does is really cool and interesting. And, you know, I had acquired my first pet at that point too, which was an African pygmy hedgehog. And so that also kind of interested, you know, having this, my very first pet and taking care of her and things like that. I was like, okay, well, maybe this is something I can, like, investigate a little bit. I'm young and can try some stuff out. So maybe I'll get my feet wet there. So I sent my resume out to some area practices and managed to get hired at a very busy general practice. And so they hired me on as an assistant, and that's where we started. So I did that for about a year. In the process, I wanted to try to figure out, is this something that I like? Is this something that I'm good at? Is this something that's going to interest me? And I really enjoyed it. The practice was very busy. They had only a couple actual, I think in Illinois, it's certified vet techs. Mm-hmm. But they kind of mentored me and taught me all of my technical skills started there, and, you know, blood draws and things like that. And So I got very comfortable with that stuff. And I was like, okay, I guess if I'm going to do this, I need to do it for real and go to school and do this thing. So my family's all from Indiana and from Purdue country. And Purdue has the vet tech program as part of the College of Veterinary Medicine. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do this for real, then I'm going to go to school for real. And I'm going to do it in my home turf. So moved back to Indiana and went to school and worked at the front desk at the vet hospital while I was going to school. And once I graduated, I went and worked in general practice again for about a year. And when I was in school, the neuro department at Purdue had just started. Like they were in its infancy, had just started doing things. And I think that my class at Purdue was the first one that had rotations with the neuro service.
Oh, wow.
And a handful of lectures from the technician that was doing neuro at the time. And so what little bit of exposure I had to that, I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff is like fascinating. And I never thought I would do specialty stuff, but I was like, you know, if I did do specialty, it would have to have something to do with neuro, because that's just really cool, you know. So anyway, so I went into general practice for a year or so, and then saw they posted a job posting for, it was neuro and ortho, kind of a half and half jobs. But I was like, hey, it's got neuro in it, so I can do that. So I applied and got the job, and then that was 9 years ago.
Wow.
So that's how I got to be where I am.
Well, I was going to say, and then at some point you decided that you wanted to specialize and get your VTS.
Yeah. So yeah. I started in Purdue in 2012, and then some life events happened that precluded me from pursuing my specialty sooner, but ultimately was able to achieve it almost 2 years ago now, which is also very strange.
Well, because 2020 lasted what, 4 or 5 years?
Yes. Yeah,
at least.
So it was, so it was really like 2019 was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So when you look at the veterinary technician profession right now, you know, this is something we kind of ask everyone now. How do you view it? What do you see as the big obstacles? What do you see as issues that we need to deal with? What's at the forefront of your brain is of how we can fix this profession?
I feel like everyone's answer is like, well, it's at a crossroads.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true, but tell us about the crossroads.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, almost 15 years at this point. So I've been kind of through it all and from lots of different perspectives. I was an assistant for a while. I did front desk stuff for a while. And then as a registered technician for almost, well, I guess it will be 10 years this year. So a decade as a registered technician. there's not like one particular thing, you know. Mm. There's just a lot of these little things that maybe have easy solutions that we're not doing. Some of them have a little bit tougher solution, you know. So then it's, do we put the cart before the horse? Do we?
Yeah.
Do we go for this thing and not that thing? You know, ideally, to me, probably what would help our profession from a good starting point to me would have to be able to establish that national credential.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Have this is our baseline, what you need to be a technician, and it's the same in every state. And starting there, then having a kind of a national voice instead of this individual states do individual things individually. And
yeah.
Well, I think that will help because, you know, when you think about it, one of the big stumbling blocks that we have with all this stuff that we're trying to change, and not to get into a whole VNI discussion,
right.
But all these stumbling blocks are because every state has their own set of rules and own
right.
set of
yeah.
regulations. Yeah. And if everyone was on the same page, it would make that big obstacle much easier to overcome because
right.
that essentially will be gone if everyone's under the same umbrella.
Right.
Yeah. So, so much discussion to be had on that.
Yeah.
So, Brittany, listening to you, kind of take us through your career path at the beginning. You've done a lot in the field, and especially even in other fields too, which I think is always really cool outside perspective. But we're actually going to be talking about something different today, and you reached out to us to talk to us about something a little bit more personal about motherhood as a veterinary technician. And certainly, you know, Dave and I have been doing this a long time, and I think we all know it's a very female dominated profession. So even though we don't have, you know, our own kids that we haven't experienced this with, we certainly have had coworkers and what have you who have been pregnant or had new kids or what have you. So let's kind of start that discussion. I guess what prompted you or inspired you to want to talk about that?
A lot of things, actually.
Okay.
Well, where do I want to start? Well, so I guess to kind of back it up a little bit. Well, first of all, this whole topic, this is probably the most nervous I've been to talk about anything, because this isn't a factual thing, right? A lot of this is just kind of based on my personal thoughts and my personal experiences, which can be very different from other people, right?
Absolutely. So, of course, yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's hard to talk about something that I can say this, but that's not going to be true of other women. And,
sure.
You know, but just thought it would be a worthwhile conversation to have, because like you said, this is a very, not just for technicians, but DVMs as well, is mm-hmm. very much a majority women profession. And it feels like something that just, it's like the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
for sure.
I actually looked up the stats on this because I was curious about this for, I think for the Women's History post that I did earlier this week. In the field, veterinarians, I believe it's 55 to 45 female, but as far as technicians, it's like 78 to 20 or something like that.
Wow.
So much more female dominated in technician realm, which is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so just to kind of provide some facts about myself, I guess, to prove that I'm capable of talking about this. So when I started at Purdue in 2012, like you said, part of my drive was because this was a neuro position and I really had a lot of a keen interest in neurology particularly, but also I was working in a private practice that really didn't offer me much. And my husband and I got married in 2011 and we were in the stage of life where we were talking about, you know, when would we like to have kids and things like that. And so part of the pull to go back to Purdue and try to get a job there was that I knew the benefits were going to be better. And so if I wanted to have kids, I needed to have, you know, a better benefits focused position for myself so that I could be able to do that without kind of overstraining or things like that. You know what I mean? I actually took a pay cut going from general practice to come to Purdue initially, but the benefit bonus was well worth it to me. You know what I mean? So, so I started in 2012. I became pregnant with my son in 2013, worked all the way through pregnancy up until I think my last day was like the 9th and my son was born on the 12th.
Oh boy. That would terrify me as a coworker.
Right up to the very, very end. Yeah. We lived about 45 minutes away from Purdue at the time. And so after having my son, and now I had a child to care for and a commute to do. And so, we had to do a lot of shuffling. I'm very, very, very fortunate, my husband and I, that our parents both live very close and are able to support us with childcare and things like that. So they kind of have been a buoy in the field of trying to work and have kids and things like that in general. But anyway, so I had my son, and then in 2015, accidentally became pregnant with my daughter. It was a surprise, unplanned thing, but she was born in 2016. And then in 2017, when she was about 18 months old, was when I was like, you know what, we're done having kids. I'm going to do this VTS thing. So then went through the whole application and VTS process with two children under, I think, 4 or 5.
Oh my.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so did all that and managed to achieve that. And then the day, well, let me think about this. About 2 days after I found out that I had passed my test in 2019, my husband was fired from his job.
Oh, no.
So we had a big life change event that happened, you know, immediately after this big professional achievement, which he managed, you know, to get a new job fairly quickly. I think he was back to work within a couple weeks or so at his new position, but, you know, it's a different schedule, different, you know, way to go about life and things like that. And so that made it tough. And then part of his new position involved working for some period of time on second shifts. And so he didn't start out like that, but he had to change over to second shift in September of last year. So amid the pandemic, I suddenly kind of find myself in a position of being essentially a single mom, because my husband's working 4 o'clock to 2 a.m. every night, and we only see each other on the weekends, and he only sees the kids on the weekends, really. And so everything has kind of fallen on my lap. So not only am I working full time, but I'm doing all the kids' things. And, you know, it became very challenging very quickly. So I just to provide a little bit of background.
Absolutely.
Where I'm at with this and why I feel like I have a reasonable voice.
Yeah, for sure.
A little bit of skin in this game.
Yeah. Dave, I don't know if you remember when we were taking our VTS exam. Do you remember Mary Ann being like 9 months pregnant?
I remember, because her name is right behind me. So right. She was sitting very close to me, and I was very nervous during the test.
And she was right next to me. And that was an extra layer of nerves for the exam. Yeah. Brittany, this is actually a really good topic that I'm so excited to hear about, because I just got married like a year and a half ago, and my wife, who's an emergency veterinarian, and just kind of like you're talking about, she works overnights. I work currently swing shifts with ASPCA, and we're talking about starting a family and what have you. And so this is very, very relevant for me. And just the other day, we were talking actually about this interview upcoming, and we were talking about how, as her being the veterinarian and me, you know, working from home now for Poison Control Center, you know, it'll probably be me doing a lot of the running around, or the, you know, as kids get older, school appointments or this, that, or the other, and you know, the different roles and what have you, and just even in her job, how, you know, it's not like she can just miss, you know, in veterinary medicine, I think in large, you know, you can't just, you know, say, I'm going to be gone for these 2 hours for my kid's school play, or, you know, my kid has a dentist appointment, I'll be back in an hour, like you can in a lot of office jobs. And it just, I had never really considered that before. And it's just something I've been thinking a lot about the last couple of weeks. So I'm really excited to have this discussion. It just makes me think a lot.
Yeah. And that's part of the drive to even want to have the discussion, because like I said, this is, it feels like as a woman and mother in the profession, it feels like it's a little bit of that elephant in the room. Everyone knows that it's a thing, but everyone likes to pretend like it's not affecting their work life, or it doesn't, you know, have an impact on work, or vice versa, that the stress of the job doesn't have an impact at home and things like that. And I think it's worth at least opening up the door of conversation, having some consideration to this kind of aspect of our jobs and who we are as women too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the other thing that I'm thinking of, and this may be different in your situation versus other people's situations, but when you think about it, you know, one of the big things we talk about as a problem in our field is the pay. Like we're not paid as well. So when someone has a child and you have to decide who's going to work, who's not going to work, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the technician that's not going to work, because the breadwinner, for lack of a better term, is going to be making money more so than the technician. Doing almost anything else, right. Exactly. And Jeff, your situation may be completely opposite of that, because Molly probably makes more than you do.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of how it normally happens in the field, is that's the opposite. I've had people that I've worked with, you know, they had their, the technician I worked with had her son, and I was like, oh, when is she coming back? And like, oh, she's not coming back. Because her husband makes more money, and it's just not worth it for her to come back to work.
Yeah.
To also have to spend all the money that she pays in childcare, like going to work is kind of detrimental, because the money that she makes is just going to childcare, where she could just be spending time with her kid.
Right.
Yeah. And that's one of the points that I wanted to kind of bring up, because you know, there's lots of discussion in lots of different arenas about, you know, technician, retaining technicians, and how do we keep them in the field, and we need to pay more, and this and that, and this and that. And nobody ever really seems to bring up or consider the timeline of events, because if we have this kind of loss of staff or loss of technicians, then, you know, what's the average, like 5 to 7 years, and they're out the door. If you think about it, for students that go to school, you know, immediately after or shortly after high school, they're, you know, in their early 20s when they're done with school, they're probably getting married within a short period of time, and then are about ready to have kids, and wouldn't you know it, that's about 5 years after you're done with school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that is a huge consideration, honestly, is the cost of childcare, to be honest. Like I said, we're very, very, very lucky that we have family close by that does the majority of this, you know, childcare for us, because the same thing would have happened. If we didn't have that, we couldn't afford to put the kids in childcare in order for me to continue to work. And there's, you know, there's lots of information out there that you can find. And just out of curiosity, I was looking, and that I found through the Economic Policy Institute website, you can look up the average cost of childcare per state. And so in Indiana, the average cost of childcare is $1,000 per month.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Yeah, for one child. Dang. And it goes up from there. And so just for some perspective, I make about $40,000 a year.
Right.
And if I'm paying $12,000 a year in childcare, well, that's like 30% of my income is going directly to childcare. So, you know, is it really worth it for, like you said, women who are the potentially lower breadwinners, if they're the ones that are technicians, and technicians tend to be paid lower than, you know, other jobs and professions and careers or whatever, then who's going to stay home? The one who makes the least amount of money, which probably most often is the one who's doing the assisting or technician work and things like that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And the costs just go up if you have more than one kid. So if I had to put both my kids in childcare, it would be... It would be pointless, really, for me to even ever go to work, because I would never see any of that money. You know,
right.
So I think that's one of the big factors that, like I said, that we aren't recognizing or haven't really considered with the whole, you know, why don't we have enough technicians, or why do people leave the field, for all the other reasons that we've talked about a million times too, but also considering this, that, you know, about 5 years into a career, if you started early, is childbearing and child rearing age. So the simple answer is to just stop working for a little while, at least, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh, I certainly never had considered that, but that you, like you said, right? that lines up perfectly. Yeah. Absolutely.
And like, from my own class, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know from my own graduating class of technicians, there's a handful of them that don't work anymore because they're raising kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, it's definitely a thing.
Wow.
Well, and if we, you know, this is kind of lofty aspirations, but if we flip the switch and said, okay, now the technician job is going to pay more money, so that now that technicians are going to be the breadwinner, then we wouldn't lose so many mothers to childcare, because if you guys are going to be the ones making more money than your spouses, then obviously that's going to keep more technicians in the field. But I don't see that happening anytime in the near future.
Potentially,
but it would be a great idea to do that.
Yeah, right. For sure. Or at least offer, you know, additional benefits, or some kind of scheduling preferences, or, you know, there are ways to at least make it a more friendly environment, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, like to make it, you know, a little bit easier.
Well, and right after 2020, you gotta think there's gotta be a job that a mother could do from home. Even in the, you know, the small animal practice field, there's got to be something that they could do. I don't know, answer the phones or do callbacks or something like that. There's got to be something that could be keeping them in the field, which is one of the big problems.
Right.
So as you were going through your pregnancy, what kind of challenges did you see? I know we've always, you know, as the guys in the field, we know that you guys can't take x-rays, you should stay away from isoflurane, you shouldn't lift, obviously. But what are some of the other things that kind of became an obstacle while you were being pregnant? And how did your team respond to that? Were they helpful? Did they kind of roll their eyes and say, oh, we gotta do more work now because Brittany can't do it?
Yeah.
How did that kind of play out when you were going through your pregnancies?
Well, let me preface this by explaining that I work with some of the most amazing people that I have ever known. Like, the reason that I've worked at Purdue for so long is because the team that I work with is just awesome.
That's great.
And so that also made my life much easier. Not only did I not have to worry about the financial strain of childcare and stuff because, you know, of our families and things, but I also had a team at work that made it much easier for me too. And I don't think that's probably true for most people, which is, again, you know, leading into this, like, why would people be like, nope, never mind, for something that they are, you know, have dedicated some amount of their life to, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
There is some kind of things that probably is similar across the board, though. So there is, for most women, this kind of secret phase of pregnancy.
Oh, should you be telling us this?
No. But, you know, there's a little bit of, I don't really want to say superstition, I guess, because that makes it sound a little bit silly. But, you know, when you first find out you're pregnant, there's lots of statistics out there and things about potential for things like miscarriage and unfortunate things like that. And so most women have a period of time where they don't really want to tell anyone because they're trying to surpass that, you know, likelihood of a failed pregnancy and things like that. So there's this early on period of time where you don't really want to tell anyone, but also, like you said, there's a lot of things in our jobs that are dangerous for pregnant women, right? And so I was fortunate in that for both my pregnancies, I had a close coworker that I could go to and say, listen, here's my situation. Not that it's a bad situation. I'm very excited about it. But, you know, both times went to my close coworker and was like, hey, I need you to help me keep this a secret by kind of being a human shield for me and kind of stepping in to do those things without making a big deal out of it so that people, you know, wouldn't be like, ooh, what's going on or things like that, you know? And so when someone would say, hey, can you go get chest rads on this dog? I'd be like, oh, I need to go draw blood on this other dog. And my coworker would be like, I'll do it. You know, they would just kind of jump in for me, which was amazing. But, you know, that's something that not everyone really thinks about too, that potentially some of the women that you work with aren't necessarily going to jump out and yell at everybody about being pregnant, at least. So there is this like little, you know, probably 8 or 10 week time period where you don't really want to tell anyone. But beyond that, once everybody kind of knows and the cat's out of the bag, then, like you said, trying to minimize exposure to these things in general. So limiting or eliminating having to, you know, hold for radiographs and limiting or eliminating exposure to things like ISO and other medications and things like that.
Litter boxes was the other thing that I remember.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, trying to prevent as much as you can. And you know, I don't think anyone wants to be a burden on their practice, right? Everyone's there to try to help out and whatever. And so it can be very hard for people to ask for the things that they might need or to, you know, be able to say, hey, I'm not really comfortable with that, you know, for this reason or that reason or the other reason, you know. I was lucky in that Purdue takes it very seriously and is very happy to provide all these things, but maybe consider if, you know, you're in practice management or ownership or whatever, that take the stress out of that by just offering some of this stuff. Like Purdue provided me with a respirator, so I could still help with anesthesia, but also feel good about that I'm not exposing myself or my unborn child to isoflurane waste gas as the dog's waiting to be extubated or whatever, you know what I mean? So that kind of thing really helped me out too. Then in the later months, I found when I was pregnant, and maybe not everyone would agree with this, but I found and I feel like most people's idea of pregnant women that they have in their head is probably based a lot on, like, you know, movies and TV and stuff. And in movies and TV, they show women at like 5 or 6 months pregnant, like maybe about halfway through. And like maybe they're complaining about, you know, soreness and this, that or whatever. But usually the absolute, like, how the size of the belly and things like that aren't really well portrayed. I remember when I was pregnant with my daughter, I think it was about there, like 5 months pregnant or so, and I was talking to a client, going over their discharge information for their pet and saying, okay, well, we'll want you to come back in 6 weeks or something so we can check on this thing again. And the owner was like, well, are you even going to be here? And I was like, of course I'm going to be here. What are you talking about? Like, you know, and he was like, well, I mean, you're like about to have a kid. I was like, oh, I am like for sure not even anywhere close to having, you know, but he just was like, that was his impression, was that I was just enormously pregnant and I wasn't even that enormously pregnant yet, you know? So I think sometimes people forget or maybe don't have a lot of experience with that, like, for me personally, I had large and in charge pregnant bellies once we got into the 8, 9, 10 month mark. And there's this other cool thing that happens. So there's a hormone called relaxin. Are you familiar with this?
Yep.
So in late stages of pregnancy, your body starts to develop this hormone called relaxin to relax all your joints. And this makes sense, right? Because you're going to have relaxed pelvic joints and things like that so you can push a human being out of your body. But that causes laxity in all of your joints. And that can be very uncomfortable. I remember with my son, I had a lot of this going on. And then all my joints hurt all the time just from how kind of loose and lax they were. It felt like a bag of bones, you know? And then everybody knows about the bladder situation, that there needs to be frequent bathroom breaks because there's just not enough room in there for your bladder to get very full. And in the late stages for me, there was a joke that we had, like, there's like one nice chair. Once we got to the late stages, it's a rolling chair. I'd be like, this is my chair now, and it's my rolling chair, and I'm going to sit in this rolling chair and roll around the hospital in it so that I can still do some things, but I'm not, you know, standing and bending and stretching. And, you know, restraint for large dogs is really hard when you have a 20-pound belly sitting in front of you, and it's, you know, some of that physical stuff can be hard. Not that it's impossible. Like I said, I worked right up until I gave birth. So I, you know, still did all these things, but it was nice to have a team that considered that and made sure that I was capable and comfortable with what I was doing, and certainly had no specific, like, well, you have to be able to do this because that's part of your job sort of mentality. You know what I mean? They were very accommodating for me.
Right. And, you know, just as a follow-up to that, you know, your team sounds pretty amazing. That one coworker specifically, do you have any idea, or have you had any discussions with other women? Do you think that's representative of what many women experience in our field, like a supportive team like that, or is that maybe more of an anomaly, the situation you had? Do you have any idea?
I really don't. I'm okay. Not entirely sure. I know the team as a whole, I mean, produced stuff to talk about. So I have, you know, my team is the little tiny neuro team, but the hospital team as a whole, I mean, I love where I work, and the majority of the technicians there do not have kids. So those of us with children are in the minority, but I feel like even amongst the other departments at work, it's similar experiences that they have had, that they're able to work to their capacity, and they don't get a lot of flack for maybe not being able to bend over and lift the 50 kg Rottweiler. Or whatever. people are at least, so I would hope that it's a little bit more like that in most places, but I have no real way to measure that, or no real sense of that, I suppose.
Gotcha.
So you mentioned that you worked up until the 9th, and then you had your son on the 12th. Did you work the entire length of your pregnancy because you had to, or because you wanted to?
Both.
Both. Okay.
Both. Yeah. I had, and this is kind of is a good segue into another thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. I had relatively easy pregnancies as well. I didn't have a whole host of complications, really, aside from some just, like, you know, general discomfort and largeness of being and frequent bathroom breaks and that sort of thing. I didn't, there's many, many other kind of complications that can go on, and maybe sometimes things that women aren't ready to disclose to everyone or something like that. You know what I mean?
I'm
not sure, but I enjoy working and I like the work that I do, and it's nice to have the extra paycheck and all that sort of thing. But there's potentially women going through pregnancy complications that might not be able to work, or might not be able to work the hours that they've always been able to work. And so how accommodating is your practice for if they need extra time off for doctor's appointments, or if they get put on bed rest or something? Some women get put on bed rest very early, and so they're out, you know, well before the baby's even due, and or lifting restrictions and all these sorts of things. So these are all potential complications or potential problems that need to be addressed in the practice. I didn't have any of those things, so I was very much able to continue working up until the very end, but that might not be true of all women. And are we being, you know, supportive enough of them to say, okay, it's okay if you need to take a break and take some time off and do what you need to do to make sure you and your baby are healthy, and we'll welcome you back as soon as you're able to. You know what I mean? I'm not sure, I guess, what that's like in general practice, but my hope is that is the case and for most people. And I worry sometimes that, you know, there's the, you know, we talk a lot about the kind of sometimes the cattiness or toxic behaviors and stuff. And that, especially when you're overworked and underpaid and all that, it's very easy to find somebody to blame for current problems or whatever. And that, you know, hopefully that isn't the case, that these pregnant women working as technicians aren't getting treated poorly because they aren't as capable. And that, you know, now the team is, I guarantee that everyone feels guilty for it. I felt guilty for everything that I couldn't do or wasn't able to do or whatever, you know. Even as my kids are older, while I'm not dealing with pregnancy things, but there's doctor's appointments and dentist appointments and school meetings and school, you know, like all these things that I have to be like, sorry, guys. I got to take some time off. I got to be able to do this. I got to be able to do that. And, you know, even aside from those, like, business related things, sometimes my kids want to do something fun for the day, or, you know, maybe I just want to go see my kid at soccer practice today or go take them to the zoo or whatever. So having a team that is amenable to that sort of thing is what makes it much nicer to work as a mother in the field, right? I know for me, my team is very amenable to those things and is very understanding and is like, yep, you can do what you need to do and we'll catch you when you get back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that makes it very easy. If I didn't have that kind of allowance to be able to do those sorts of things as a parent, then maybe I would reconsider, money aside, like, do I really want to spend, if I can't go do the things that I want to do with my family, do I need to keep working? You know?
Right. And you know, I think about that a lot too, because, you know, throughout my career, I've certainly worked with a number of pregnant women or a number of new mothers. And, you know, having this discussion now, kind of looking back, it makes me open my eyes a little bit more to just, again, just another way of how broken is this system that, like, we ostracize the expectant or the new mothers because of the strain they put on the practice, because we don't have the resources to pick up the slack. And it's the same thing with just, you know, even somebody that's not going through a pregnancy taking a sick day, right? I mean, we villainize them, you know, for the strain they put on them. And that's just one day.
Right.
Yeah. And how broken the system is that we just don't have the resources or what have you, that one person is literally backbreaking.
Right.
It's just another way that's reinforced.
Right. Yeah. And that, like I said, you know, like you said, that potentially the folks in the practice kind of develop this bad taste for mothers and mm-hmm. expectant mothers and things like that, because it causes, quote mm-hmm. unquote, causes a strain on the practice. And you know, I guarantee that I know I felt bad. I still feel bad when there's days I'm like, I can't today, guys, I got to do this thing. You know, there's always going to be that guilt that you're not going to be there for the team that day or whatever, because you know that they're busy and you know that they're whatever. And trying to, again, this is why I felt like this is a good conversation to have, because
trying to kind of
open the door to, like, considering that I don't want to leave early because I just want to leave early. I have to, you know what I mean? Right.
You're not going home to soak in the tub and have a glass of champagne. Like.
Right. And I've had the conversation a small handful of times with different folks that, you know, somebody who has kids is like, it's 5:00, I'm walking out the door. And so there develops, you know, maybe some of that little, like, within a small group, like, oh, she always leaves on time or whatever. But coming in and saying, listen, like, she has to leave on time because she has to pick up her kids at daycare, because if she doesn't get the kids on time, then she has to pay more for daycare. You know what I mean? So, like, it's a cascading effect if she doesn't put boundaries down and say, this is what I have to do.
Right.
And it's not meant to make, you know, the folks that don't have kids or family to care for at home and stuff, it's not meant to make you feel like you have to pick up the slack. Honestly, this is a higher level problem than the staff itself. This is things that need to be addressed from up above, upper management and things like that, that if there's such a strain and it's causing such strife for somebody to have specific scheduling needs and whatever, then perhaps you need more people.
Well, I kind of think about that. This toxic behavior has been going on in the field for years of wearing that overworking yourself as a badge of honor, where if you as a mother can't do that because you've got responsibilities, you've got to pick up your kid, you've got appointments to go to, where you're looked down upon because the other people, I'm not saying that this is happening where you're at, because it sounds like you have a super supportive team, which is amazing, but just that badge of honor people wear of overworking themselves to the point where they're exhausted. And that's one of those behavions that just has to stop, because it's just
martyrdom.
So,
if I don't do it, nobody else will, and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right.
It's just exhausting
to even
talk about it. And again, it's not, to me personally, it's not a problem that needs to be addressed amongst the staff, of like, everyone just needs to get along and be understanding, which yes, that is some degree of it, but upper level folks need to consider that, like, if this is the culture that's being developed because some of our staff have specific needs outside of work, maybe we need to have more staff or change the way our schedules run or something to make it more equitable, not necessarily fully equal, but equitable for everyone involved, so that the, you know, people with children don't feel guilty for having to leave when they have to leave, and the people that don't have children don't feel like they're, you know, carrying the the weight of the practice on their shoulders and that sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, and for example, just, I think it was Wednesday, with my husband being on night shift and my team carries on-call responsibilities, and with my husband on nights and having kids, there's not a lot I can do. You know, I don't have a lot of options to help with that on call. And so one of the things that I offered and do is many nights of the week, I am quote unquote on call until 7. So if we have a case that's going late into the evening, I can stay until 7 to try to finish that case, which is hopefully going to preserve my teammates, because a lot of times, you know, it'll finish by 6 or 6:30 or whatever. And so they don't even have to be involved, even though they're on call the rest of the night. Hopefully they have a quiet rest of the night and I took care of the thing, so I can feel like I'm being more of a team player. But literally on Wednesday night, we had a case that was going late and it was approaching 7 o'clock, and I was like, I had to text my teammate and I was like, I'm sorry, sis. Like, it's close to being done. I hate having you come in, because I know they're going to be done in the next, like, you'll be walking out of here in 45 minutes or something. Like, I want to be able to finish that for you, but I have to go get my kids, like, you know? And so I felt super guilty having her come in, and she, you know, she didn't care. She's amazing and was like, oh yeah, do your thing. Like, I get it. It's fine. Like, no big deal. And again, this is why I love the team that I work with, because they're very understanding, but it doesn't prevent me from feeling guilty and feeling bad that I feel like I'm not able to help in more ways than that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
The other side of that coin is pre-children. I was definitely that person that was like, there's still things to do. I'm going to work until the shift ends at 5 and I'm going to be here until 8 because this thing needs done and that thing needs done. And I'm just going to stay here and help because I want to help everybody. And, you know, we all leave when the work's done and that sort of thing. And I would stay late all the time and all that. And then I had my son and I was like, nope. Nope, I'm not doing that anymore. And there was a little period of time where people were a little bit chapped about that and were like, how come you don't help out anymore? And like, I do what I can, but I have to set that boundary where I need to spend time with my family too, you know. And I'm not saying that people without kids can't do that. I think all of us need to be better at saying, nope, this is the end of my shift. I'm leaving. I need to go home, whether you have something to do at home or not. You just need to go home so you can watch Parks and Rec or whatever, so that you can decompress. Like, I think all of us as a profession as a whole need to be better at boundary making and not having that martyrdom attitude of, well, I'm the only one that's willing to do it, so I'm going to do it, and then be mad that I'm the only one that's doing it.
True. I think about a new mother that's, you know, just had a baby and is out for, you know, a few weeks. And our profession isn't one that uses temporary help. You know, we don't have, you know, an agency that we can call, you know, and just have somebody come in for a few weeks and, you know, do this desk job or do that desk job that person was fulfilling. And I think this is a huge area where, like, relief services could really be of benefit, to just plug that person in at least, you know, even a shift or two a week, or, you know, and then this person take a shift or two a week and actually fill that void instead of just being down a person for several weeks.
Right. And, you know, to be honest, Jeff, that kind of circles back to the very beginning when I said having a national standard.
Right.
would make something like that very easy, right?
There
if somebody that lives in Oregon is like, I do remote work, and so I can come and locum and fill a shift or 10 or 20 or work for 6 months for this practice while they go through this, you know, maternity leave or whatever kind of shortage they have, it'd be much easier to do that if there was a national standard that we didn't have to be like, well, technically, you're not licensed in the state, so you can do this stuff, but you can't do that stuff. You know,
Right, right. And so now that you are a mom working at Purdue, are there any maybe extra benefits, shall we say, or resources that are available to you that, you know, working in that kind of environment provides that maybe others don't? I mean, aside from like scheduling and what have you, you know, what does that look like?
All of it, to be honest. And this is the part where I'm going to feel super, super guilty, because I'm going to say some things and some people listening are going to be like, what? because I mean, it makes me feel bad that I've benefited from a lot of these things that are not offered uniformly throughout the profession by any stretch of the imagination. And in that first practice I worked at as a technician outside of school, I had 5 paid days off a year.
Okay.
Period. 5. I could take more than that, but I wasn't going to get paid for it.
Right, so I
had to pick and choose which days I wanted to be paid for. And you know, I saved those five. I got married that year, so I saved those 5 days for my wedding and honeymoon and, you know, all that stuff. So I didn't really take a lot of time off that year, you know. And when I started at Purdue, the number of paid days off that I get a year is crazy. It's crazy high. They had to change some things, so it's not quite so high for new hires now, but I have been there so long that those us old folks that have been there for a while have kind of grandfathered into this, like, lots and lots of paid time off. But I personally get like 22 days off a year of vacation. Mm-hmm. That's vacation.
Yeah.
I get something like 6 or 8 weeks of sick leave.
Yeah.
Or maybe even more than that. I don't even know. It's some crazy high number of sick leaves. And that's separate from vacation. Mm-hmm. And plus there's like, it's a university, so we get holidays off and, you know, all that stuff that just doesn't happen in general practice. And so I had the huge, huge benefit. If I had stayed at the first practice I was at, I would have had to probably stay off work for maybe 5 or 6 weeks, and probably 5 of those weeks would have been unpaid. Hmm. I was able to have a 3-month-long maternity leave for both of my kids because of the benefits that I have at the university, which is amazing. And that never happens.
Right.
It's been a while since I've been working with someone that went through a pregnancy. What is the typical maternity leave that mothers will take off?
So there's the Family Medical Leave Act allows for 6 weeks of maternity leave, but I believe, and on the spot here, off the top of my head, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's up to the employer whether that's going to be paid time off or not. Mm-hmm. But it's 6 weeks of protected time, so they can't like fire you for being gone for 6 weeks, but they certainly don't have to pay you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because in the United States, it's not a requirement to pay people for maternity leave. So most people take that 6 weeks, probably unpaid. And so, yeah, now we're back to the pay discussion, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
So if you're going nearly 2 months without an income or lower income, if you have a partner that's providing income for you, then, you know, that's still a challenge, you know what I mean? And so what does that mean for general practices? Well, I guess maybe consider paying the leave, and maybe not 100%, but shoot, if I had the choice between being paid not at all for 6 weeks and being paid 50% of 6 weeks, I would rather be paid 50%. So having those kind of thoughts and considerations. And I think, I can't remember, somewhat recently somebody brought up, because this has been discussion, I think, at the federal level, the whole like mandated paid maternity leave and things like that for the United States. And somebody pointed out, which I thought was very apropos to our conversation, that as veterinary professionals, we don't recommend breeders selling their puppies less than 8 weeks. Right?
Yeah.
And we're asking women to send their kid to childcare at 6. You know, 6 weeks old is like nothing old. They're still very tiny, very fragile babies. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to think about, honestly, that is the standard that we set, is that, you know, in 6 weeks, you need to be ready to come back to work. And I can tell you at least from my son, I was not at 6 weeks. I wasn't ready. You know, there's a lot more things that happen in maternity leave. I don't know how much people really think this, or if it's just a perception. Like, maternity leave is not a vacation. It's not vacation, guys. it's just not. It's being covered in spoiled milk, and can you get a shower in before the baby starts crying again? And, you know, it's not easy stuff. So trying to provide some sort of benefits in that regard to make that transition from being childless to having a child a little bit easier for your employees, maybe that would help retain employees as well, right? If I knew that my team was going to be accommodating and that I was getting some amount of pay for my leave and all that stuff, that's going to make me much happier staying where I'm at. You know what I mean?
Well, and just thinking about the 6 weeks of leave, you know, if you go for 6 weeks without pay, you as your family, you're going to figure out a way to make it work, right? Like, you're not going to go starving. You're not going to make your kids starve.
Hopefully
not. I guess I shouldn't say that universally is true, but in those 6 weeks, you figure out how to make it work, right? And then when 6 weeks is up, you look at your financial statements and say, well, we've been making it work for 6 weeks. Why do I need to go back to work? So there's really no incentive to go back if you're already making it work. If you were getting paid even 50%, you'd say, oh, we're doing so much better, I should continue to work. But right. if you're making it work without the pay, what's the incentive for you to go back?
Right. Mm. Yeah. And I can say too, like, there is, like I said, it's not easy stuff. There's lots and lots of crazy hormonal things that happen after childbirth. And I would describe myself as a pretty even keeled person. I can, you know, take most things as they go and kind of roll with the punches, but that was a big punch and it was tough with my son, especially to get through. And, you know, like I said, at 6 weeks, I wasn't ready to go back. By 12, I was ready. You know, at that 3 month point, like you said, I was like much more in well seated in my role as a mother and had a better grasp of how I was going to handle the schedule, my day to day schedule of like what time to get up and when to feed my kid and when to take him to grandma's and when to get to work and all that stuff. And so that extra time really, because I'll be honest, when I was home with my son, I was thinking about what else. Can I take an administrative job? You know, can I just be a secretary for a while instead? Because it sounds too much to me to go back to work at, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks. But by 12 weeks, I was like, you know what? I can do it. And was happy to come back because I, as much as I love my children, I also really love the challenge of taking care of my patients and using my brain for work stuff. And I love that I have these two different identities, this, my professional self, and then my, you know, kind of home mother self, and kind of just change hats throughout the day. But like I said, yeah, without having the support that I had at my work, it would have been a much different consideration, much, much more different challenge to get back into the field. Whether I would have done it or not, you know.
Gotcha. You know, one thing I wonder is, you know, thinking about, you know, this whole past hour of discussion here, is there something or you know, one thing or a couple of things that you think that not necessarily federally mandated or state mandated, but just in our field that you would like to see hospitals provide or make available or just do for expectant mothers in terms of benefits or what have you, to just make this process less burdensome on yourself, on your team, et cetera? Are there any things that stand out that would just be like, man, if we just did these one or two things, this would be so much better?
Yeah, probably the two biggest things to me is the ability to have some amount of paid leave. You know, like I said, it doesn't necessarily, maybe it doesn't have to be 100% paid. 100% paid would be amazing, but being able to have that leave and be making a paycheck is going to alleviate the strain of new motherhood in a huge degree. And so increasing how much paid time off, you know, if it's a small practice and you're only getting 5 paid days off a year, then yeah, why would I stay here after I have my kid? You know, and if you're a practice that's like, gosh, every time we turn around, one of our employees is quitting because they're having kids and whatever, and we don't want to hire anybody that is going to have kids or childbearing, or because it's just going to cause a strain, we're just constantly having to hire new people and whatever, maybe consider, could we offer more paid time off, more benefits in that regard? And then the other kind of pillar to that, aside from having more paid time off, would be flexibility in scheduling. That is probably one of the top things that has made my life super easy with the team that I work with, is that they really allow me to work my schedule in a way that works for me. You know, my son started kindergarten in 2019, and my husband at the time, his shift was very early in the morning, so he was going to work at 5 a.m. So it's kind of the opposite of what we're currently dealing with. So he was already gone in the morning. And so somebody had to get my kid on the bus, and that somebody was me. And his bus didn't come until 8:30, and my shift started at 8. So I sat down with my team and said, hey, this is the situation that I'm in right now. I'm happy to work, you know, 9 to 6 instead of 8 to 5, so that I can deal with my stuff at home and still be able to provide the things that my work needed as well. And they were like, sure, let's do it. You know, there wasn't a big to do about, well, that's not fair to so-and-so, or any of this things that happen like that, where people get frustrated at scheduling things. And even considering that like, the school day isn't really made for working families, because school starts at 9 and it ends at 3 or 3:30 or whatever. And whose work schedule is that?
Yeah.
who has those hours? Like, nobody does. So, right. You know, maybe even having some shifts that are full time, but not 40 hours a week so that people can work that kind of midday shift. Guess what? That's when everybody wants to take a lunch break, too. So if you had somebody that came in at 10 o'clock and was like, okay, here I am. And then everyone else can, you know, intermittently take their lunch. And then their midday person gets to leave midday because their shift's only 4, 6, 5 hours, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that would be a useful thing for a lot of women and families, because then they can get the kids on the bus and then be home when they get home. And and then also provide some extra support to the practice.
Yeah. I think that would be a great idea. You touched on this briefly just by saying that you're a fairly even-keeled person. Do you have any experience with postpartum depression? I know, you know, it may not be something that you've experienced, but I'm sure you've probably looked into some resources for this to because as you were probably going through pregnancy, you probably thought about that at some point. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. In the thick of it, I would have said, no, I'm all good. But in retrospective consideration, I was not good. So you actually open up a little bit wider door than you expected, Dave. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this. Like, this could end up to be another very long answer, very long discussion. But we'll just edit it down. It's fine.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So that is very much a thing. And with all of the, you know, women friends of mine that have kids, I feel like every single one that I know has experienced it to some greater or lesser degree. My son, he's, you know, my first kid, and, you know, everybody talks about it's not so much a quiet thing anymore, which is great that, you know, my OB and the docs in the hospital and stuff made sure they were like touching base with me and stuff, which is great. But it kind of ends once you leave the hospital, right? And so my son he was about 2 or 3 weeks old, started to have these kind of apneic events, and he had several in one day. And in retrospect, I'm pretty sure they were probably actually seizures, but no one was really for sure what was going on. He would just have these like 30-second periods where he would kind of stop breathing, and ended up in the NICU. And we spent some time in the NICU, and of course he didn't do it the whole time we were in the hospital. But ended up getting discharged with a, you know, quote unquote clean bill of health or whatever. And then about 4 weeks later or so, I think he was about 6 weeks old. So again, halfway through my leave, and when I would have normally been headed back to work, right? If I hadn't been able to take 3 whole months off. But about 6 weeks old, I took him to his regular pediatrician appointment, and the nurse, they do head circumference measurements. And so she measured his head. And then she did it again, and then she went to put it in the computer, and then came back and did it again. And I mean, I'm a technician, and so I know what that means. And that means something about this measurement isn't right. And that's why she's just, I'm just double checking. I forgot what it was. I'm like, you didn't forget, sis. Yeah. Something's not right with it. So that kind of raised my hackles a little bit of like, what is going on? And so then the doc came in and he was like, yeah, your son's head is kind of above the percentile. It's in like the 100% range, which is a little bit unusual. Not sure why that's happening. There could be some different causes, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, well, first we did a transfontanel ultrasound, which I was like, this is silly because they're not going to know what they're looking at because nobody does those, which guess what? They were like, the radiologist was like, yeah, I don't know. Well, let's do a head CT. He was like, we should have just done the head CT, but whatever. What do I know? I'm just a technician, right? So he at 6 weeks old had a head CT, and that all came back very normal. So, which was relieving. But again, you know, this is all in new motherhood and whatever, and ended up changing pediatricians, and she took a look at my son and was like, you know, I don't want to stress you out, but I'm concerned he may have dwarfism. So I was like, okay. So then we went down this track of seeing geneticists and things like that, and essentially is confirmed he has a form of dwarfism, which doesn't affect his quality of life at all. It just means he's short and not a big deal. But at the time, in this postpartum hormone soup, it's a lot to take in, you know what I mean? And having to deal with that with my first kid, and not really anybody that I knew at the time was having kids, so I didn't even really have any women around me to be like, help me with this, you know? And so it was a lot to deal with. And then also there's like this isolating thing that happens when you have newborns. People don't really want to bother you. you know, because they know that you're tired and they want to see the baby, but they don't want to intrude on your life too much or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. I felt myself being very isolated during those 3 months as well, that again, we lived kind of far away from everybody and we didn't have much contact aside from our families, didn't have much contact with, you know, friends and things like that, because they didn't want to intrude. And ultimately that resulted in me feeling very isolated a lot of the time, and probably part of why when I was time to go back to work, I was ready, because it's like, I just need to be around, you know, other people and feel some amount of normalcy in my life. And so, yeah, it's for sure a thing that happens. And then, like I said, consider if we're asking these women to come back at 6 weeks and that they're still probably very much in this crazy ultra hormone stage. It's what adds to another layer of challenge in what we're asking women to do, you know?
Yeah. Brittany, I know we could continue this probably for several more episodes, but yeah, for sure. We've already taken up so much of your time. I don't want to, but I also don't want to, you know, just close the door on the conversation. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about or that we didn't ask that you want to get out to your colleagues about either your experience or, you know, how to support your, you know, our colleagues that are going through this or anything that we didn't touch on?
I mean, I feel like we got through the big stuff, and my big, like, just general feeling is that be nice to each other, you know, like, I mean, that's true of everybody, whether it's your colleagues with kids or not or whatever, but, you know, just try to have a little bit of compassion and understanding. And, you know, the more you can function like that, probably the more loyal employees you'll have and the longer people stick around and hopefully develop kind of a happier culture work environment. So those are the places people like to stick around and like to be at. So consider this as part of your, let's not be rude to Sarah who has kids and has to leave on time every day, because that's just her reality and it's different than your reality. And can we just consider everybody's situations a little bit differently and with some love behind it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to end it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Dave has one last question for you.
The Vet Tech Cafe would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Okay.
Would you rather sit with your kids as they eat the peanut butter sandwich you cut into triangles like a jerk instead of circles like they asked for? Or eat a sandwich they prepared after they went to the bathroom and quote unquote swear they washed their hands?
Oh my God, the triangles. No, that's not even a would you rather. That's a no brainer. I'm lucky. My kids are pretty easygoing, and so they don't get too worked up about this isn't the blue plate. This is the green plate. Or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I don't really have to deal with that too much. Probably because early on I was like, no, we're not playing that.
We're not doing that.
No.
Yeah, but yeah, my kid, they do pretty good. So yeah, I'd rather sit and have them whine about the food that they eat than have to eat something that they made for me. Maybe when they're a little bit older, that discussion would change.
Yeah, right.
There you go. Right now, that sounds precarious for sure. Well, Brittany, thank you so much for your time and opening our eyes to some of these challenges. I know they're you know, a lot of the things that we discussed are not unique to you or to us or to, you know, I mean, our profession, it's just so broken in so many ways.
And
this is, you know, just another layer of things to consider that we can be better at. And so thank you so much for being willing to come on and talk about this, because I know it's far more personal than it is professional. So I really appreciate the insight. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for reaching out to us. This is a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was great chatting with you both this morning. Caffeinators, I hope you guys are well, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Bye, guys.
Hey, Caffeinators. We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As you guys are well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession, and we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave and I as the hosts or those opinions expressed by our guests are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, any other business or institution or any other entity with or within the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please feel free to email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. You can check out our website, vettechcafe.com. And please, whatever podcast form you're using to listen to our episodes, like us, follow us there, like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, have a great day, caffeinators. You guys are awesome. Bye, guys.